Hello, and welcome to our vodcast, All the Things. My name is Fernell Miller.
And I'm Dr. Jen Self.
Hi, I'm Erin Jones, and we are here to talk about all the things.
Faith, politics, race, gender.
All the things that have been off the table, we're going to talk about those things.
Again, welcome to All the Things. Let's get started with today's episode. We start everything we do with gratitude. I want to remind you that gratitude is not something we do naturally. It's something we have to practice. It's like a muscle that we need to flex. And so I just want to encourage you as you're listening today to think about something that you are grateful for. Okay, Ms. Fernell, let's do a ground in.
Yes. Well, first, this is a practice that helps us just be more present within ourselves. And then it helps us bring ourselves present with each other. And so for those of, you know, the three of us right here, but all of you who are listening, to give yourself permission to put aside distractions, square up wherever you are, put down what's in your hands. Even if you're walking, you can do this. Just, focus on your breathing and become present with yourself. Move out of your head space and into your heart space. So I'll start us off with a deep breath, and we'll go about 30 seconds and just pull that air in and out of your body and let yourself feel where you are. And then I'll bring us back with a final three breaths. Okay. Eyes open or closed, however you like. I like my palms up as I sit. And then just start with that deep, deep breath. Pull it in. Feel your shoulders drop and the tension leave. Put that distraction and stress aside. Feel safe and supported where you are in this moment. And last three deep breaths. And do what your body needs to do. Stretch, yawn, shake, exhale hard, pull in that last deep breath. And let it go as you pull yourself back into this present state and be with us right here as we go forward. Thanks again for being with us.
Oh, hi everyone. I'm Fernell Miller.
I'm Dr. Jen Self.
And I am Erin Jones. And we're going to talk about today. Y'all, we're having kind of a moment right now. So we're having a moment. Y'all are missing the pre-moment, the pre-podcast moment. Yes, but we're having a moment today, y'all. So we're going to talk today, not about white supremacy culture, but about white supremacy culture. But we want to take a little detour, a little caveat to something you may have heard of, cancel culture, which feeds absolutely into white supremacy, absolutely. Mm. And so we're gonna talk a little bit about cancel culture today. Yeah, there we go. Miss Fernell, go ahead. What else do you wanna add to that?
Oh my goodness, I wish you could see a picture that's in my head of wait, here, can I show this? Here's my shirt, My t-shirt I'm having made. Order your sizes here.
Says, I don't want to play anymore. White supremacy culture. I quit.
Nobody wins. Nobody wins. So there's my shirt about it. And I just, it's just, you know, mind boggling to me of how folks who have canceled. This is what our pre-party was about. Erin and Jen were teasing me about, when does Fernell stop? She's holding circles. She's talking about everything. When does she take a day off? And I said, all my life, I've been canceled. I want to talk about what nobody will talk about. And how do you talk about something that nobody will say out loud or do? And so it's just mind-boggling to me to now we can talk about it. And now you and the ones who need to talk about it, the ones who've been doing all the counseling for decades, now can't handle being held, you know, accountable about it. Like, oh goodness, that we're just now you. So we're pushing on you from the other side, because it's usually the unprotected, marginalized folks who always get canceled, and you never hear about it, or it's not a big deal. Because guess what? You shut it down with your power, your money, your politics, everything. And the reason you shut it down is because you know we're right. So now that the tables turn and you can see the wrongness in plain daylight, it's like a black light. I love that. And so and so now you're having a fit about being shown in the black light. Just say, oh gosh, yep, here it is. Let's like you've already said, Aaron, get the antiseptic out, get the wound exposed so we all can heal about it. Because what is canceling going to do? What is it shutting it down going to do? We're right here because we've always shut it down. So no, I'm not exhausted. No, I'm not going to stop talking about it. No, I've been waiting my entire life to be able to have these conversations that heal. And it's happening right in front of my eyes. I was just talking about my racial healing circle today and how one of our guests just talked about how the DNA of silencing herself or being silenced because it could cost not only her own safety, but her family's safety, her whole community safety, but from drinking out of the wrong fountain or saying the wrong thing. And the canceling is death. And so all we're doing now is having a conversation. Nobody's dying, but you can't even talk about it. Oh my gosh. I had to talk about it when I was 4 and 5 years old. You're 50. Talk about it. You're not going to die. Yeah. Nobody's really. Your discomfort is equal to erasing my whole generations of family. Stop it. Stop that.
You know what? I love what you just said there, bringing it back to history. Because Dr. Day, I'd love to hear after this, like the history of the word cancel culture. But for now, I love that you brought it back to actual history. And how often were people who looked like us canceled, like literally hung from trees, shot in the square,
right,
burned alive, right? Because we looked at someone the wrong way.
Right.
Or we were perceived to have looked at someone the wrong way, even if we didn't do it.
And what is the wrong way anyway? Oh, wrong.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right. And so I just think it's interesting if you go way back to the way back, the irony and the hypocrisy of calling, whether it's Dr. Seuss or it's Donald Trump being canceled from Twitter, like really, like you're that upset about it that you're investing hours of time tweeting and writing Facebook posts about that. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, for generations, we were literally canceled or threatened to be canceled. And so
we had to watch it on TV to be canceled to even like do really. So that is,
yeah. But Dr. Jen, I would love, I know that we all three of us listened to a podcast, but I would love for you to share. We had a pre conversation.
We did.
So we had a pre, yes. And I'd love to hear from Dr. Jen.
I was telling Aaron that I listened to another podcast today about where cancel culture came out of, and I had forgotten that the word that cancel had been used on Black Twitter for a long time as a joke that people use it as like, so and so is canceled, as just like fun, as a fun, just kind of funny and as a joke, and it had been used that way a long time. And I remembered that because like people at the Q Center used to say that, and it was, they used it as just kind of in tongue in cheek. And then Allison Roman, who is a food person, food, like, you know, made food and showed it off online. She, in the early part of the pandemic, she became kind of popular online, and she one day started criticizing Chrissy Teigen and telling the world, I guess, that Chrissy Teigen had sold out. And the next day, Twitter went nuts, and they were telling Allison Roman that she was canceled. And that was the first time that people really spoke back. And that was really when it took off. And then during the pandemic, it started taking hold and became a word that people started using in this particular way. And the folks on this podcast were saying, well, a lot of it was because we all went indoors and we were all online, and that we were just, you know, we started being online, and really that's where our social world was, and it became more important to all of us. And that's where our ethics were taking place. And that's where we all started to feel like we had some power, that we could actually change the norms of our culture online.
And I think it's so ironic, though, that it has now become, you know, just the reason I wanted to talk about it today. I don't know when this will air, but Dr. Seuss's birthday was this week. And I've done read alouds on Dr. Seuss's birthday for a long time, until 2 years ago. So I have a friend who would invite me to her school every year, and I would go read. And then 2 years ago is when I learned the story of Dr. Seuss and his history. And I felt super conflicted. And I was like, man, this friend has been asking me to read at her school for years now. And fortunately, the day that she invited me 2 years ago, I couldn't go anyway. And I was so happy that I didn't have to say no to her and give her the, because I just didn't have the energy to try to educate her on this big event that she's been doing for a long time. But I didn't have to go. And then last year, of course, we didn't have school, so I didn't go again last year. But watching Facebook and Twitter erupt over just, should we do Dr. Seuss? Should we not read aloud America? You know, should it be all about Dr. Seuss? And then when the Dr. Seuss Foundation decided to stop publishing 6 of his books, then I watched people lose their ever loving minds. And just found it so empty, this idea that on both sides, I think on both sides. So the people that say, man, he's the best author ever, and it doesn't matter what his thoughts were early in his life, he all these great books, and you're just gonna cancel him. And over 6 books, y'all, not all of his books were taken off the shelves. 6 books are not gonna be produced anymore. They are still out there somewhere. That's all. So people are losing their minds over that. And then on the other side, people saying anybody who reads Dr. Seuss anything is a racist. And I'm like, I just wish y'all would care that much about actual Black and Chinese and Jewish people. I would love to see you invest as much energy as you have just spent on Twitter. Ooh, I would love to see you actually fight. I would love to see you actually fight on my behalf, because right now I could give a rip about Dr. Seuss. Like, whether Dr. Seuss books are in the library or not in the library is not gonna change the life of my children, right, or my children's children. I want to see you actually invest that kind of energy in something that actually matters.
Matters.
And so I feel like cancel culture has become this distraction and diversion from actually doing work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because that's what we're good at when we don't want to really do what's necessary, what's right, things that will change, that take energy, that take consistency. Like you've always said, Dr. Jen, if white folks could just be consistent, but, you know, go down a side road, and this is like a chewy toy off to the side. Is this really going to matter for anything? No. Mm-hmm. And you know what? My parents are educators, and the kind of educators who were like teachers of the year in the 1950s. So I know every kind of book that's out there, and we never had any Dr. Seuss books in our home, because the way that the world looked in the pictures that depicted what we looked like, it wasn't true, and it was damaging.
Right.
So I don't even like, my parents canceled that long ago. I don't know what y'all are, you know, up in arms about. Don't you do that for your children, or do you even look in your books close enough? And so the representation that is so powerful, that's what, you know, dominant culture would not understand of why not have those books, is because when you are in the school systems, you in these activities, the big read, all of that, and you've got the kid who is going to see that one book that represents him like that in front of all his, you know, white counterparts, is that damaging that one child worth all the fun and the pictures and all of the hoopla over that. So look at all your libraries. It's not just Dr. Seuss. Look at all of your books, okay? And maybe be on fire
there you go.
About that.
Yeah.
You know, go. I dare you. Go look at all your libraries at home, at school, in church, especially. Go check your library. And if you have black and brown kids who are going to see those books, how are they going to see themselves in it? And if it's not the picture that you'd want to see for your own kids, then do something about that.
Yeah. You know what that reminds me of? Just to help people connect all the dots. And maybe you don't have little kids, but it reminds me of the renaming of schools and and places right now, right? Like people are saying, oh, you're canceling Jefferson and you're canceling Robert E. Lee. And we're actually holding people accountable.
Accountable.
And yeah. and we're thinking about what is, I love what you said for now. You know, I was having a conversation this week with a school district where they're thinking about renaming a school. And apparently 50-something% of people voted to keep the old name and 40-something% voted to change the name. And what I said is equality would say, so equity versus equality. Equality would say, well, more people voted to keep the old name.
Right, right.
But equity would say, who is that doing harm to? So who are the students that are going to walk into that building and feel harmed by that name? Who are the students or the people in your community that will walk by that statue and feel harmed because it's at the center of your town? That's what you should be thinking about. Not, oh, well, more people than more people voted to keep it there. Well, yeah, the more people who are already in charge, the more people who already have access to resources, the more people that already have a million different representations of who they are, of course they're going to say, yeah, let's keep it, right? Because history tells them, you're fine. If we're really going to do equity work, we need to be thinking about who are the 40% or the 10% or the 5%.
Try 2%.
Exactly. Yeah, or the 1%. Right. The one that's child. Right. The one child. Who's that one child that's going to be harmed? Is it better? And here's the thing I would say to Dr. Seuss folks or to Mark Twain folks, right? Same kind of thing. Mark Twain, Huckleberry Finn, Tom Sawyer.
Yeah.
Y'all, it'd be different if we had no other books to read.
Right.
Then maybe we could have a conversation. But I would argue, as a literature major myself, and as a writer myself, that there are enough great books of greater value, in my opinion. There are enough books of greater value that why are we celebrating those people? So I'm one that I don't believe we take Dr. Seuss out of the library. I believe it becomes a teaching tool to talk about how to be critical thinkers, right?
That's right.
And if we're going to celebrate someone, not celebrate him for a whole day, like there are other authors other sets of authors that we could be celebrating who have as good or better work.
Yeah.
And swap it out as many days as there are in the year. How about we start doing that every day for the ones who have not been heard and been silenced and been canceled and aren't living anymore? How about that? So, and there we haven't even begun to start that list.
Yeah, I know when you were talking earlier, Fernell, and talking about I've been canceled for so long, I was thinking about how there are times when I'm asked questions or I'm asked about myself and I go silent because I don't even have words for, I don't even have a way of explaining myself about my gender or about, because I haven't put them into words because I've never, I've never had that opportunity to talk about that or a way I've experienced something because I just, it's never been, people aren't interested. They've never wanted to hear it. So it's, I hadn't thought about it that way about being canceled, but.
But I also wonder, Dr. J, if your mere existence is a threat too.
Oh yeah.
Because it doesn't, I mean, just to make that connection there, it's not that people aren't interested exactly, but if you were to be given a platform to speak, then it would open the door that maybe there are other people like you.
Oh, yeah.
And that would threaten our very existence. And it would threaten this binary concept that we call gender, right? And so I wonder, too, if you're not canceled in ways and not encouraged to not speak, encouraged to not think about these things or to articulate them out loud, because that would be a threat to the patriarchy. It would be a threat to this binary way that we think about the world. And I wonder about that too.
Yeah, I think that's definitely true. I think there are a lot of ways that that happens overtly and subtly to me and to people who are non-binary and to trans folks who have a binary experience as well. I think that while that can feel to some people like less of an in-between, I think it can also sometimes be read as deconstructing that same binary. So yeah.
So I'm curious, for now, you know, one of the things I was thinking about as Dr. J was talking is, even for me, understanding what it means to be biracial or light skinned, and then the conversations that you and I have all the time about being dark skinned, even, and the ways those conversations about colorism get canceled too. Not only by white people, but even in our own community.
Yeah.
We're not allowed to, encouraged to talk about those things.
Right. And the pain of that is it's again the story that's locked inside of you that doesn't have it has visual context but no words. I mean, even in my adult life, when I'm talking about it or bringing up colorism or adultification or all of those things, people are looking at me like, what word did you just use? What did you just say? What is that about? And to have no means to talk about it is a cancellation, of the conversation and the people who have those conversations. And so this is what's so, exciting to me, is to be able to bring it to the light, to unearth it, to put it out there, and then boom, all there it is, all of it. And so what's even more hypersensitive is in areas where I live, where the percentage is, 2% black and brown kids, to the courage, the bravery to be able to even begin those conversations, have them and hold them and be intentional about them without being, shut down, not have anybody even understand what you're talking about. I showed a documentary by Melissa Lowry, my favorite person, called Black Girl in Suburbia. And it's the first time ever that I've seen my story out loud, outside of my home. 400 people show up in this community where there's, I'm one of five black teachers. I told you that before. And to finally start a conversation and have that, because the places with the most beautiful buildings and programs and money and all have the deepest, darkest, dirtiest holes of inequity. And so here was a place to shine the light on that. And oh my goodness, after that, they didn't want to have not one conversation again after it. Oh, cancel. And even from the black and brown people in the community, because it's risky. We were taught, don't tell, don't you know, it might cost my job. No, it might cost. And then, so here we're going to start the legacy of letting kids be racially abused and suffer and all through school and everything. And then now we wonder why they don't want to go back.
Yeah.
That we can't heal like that. We have to bring it to the light. We have to put it in the open. We have to put our talking about it is our neosporin. That's why we have to go to those places where we never say the hush, the taboo, the even and especially between us folks of color. So,
You just said something about cost. And so I'm thinking about money and resources. And, as we were listening to the first podcast, the professor talks a lot about canceling, really true canceling happens when those from dominant society who have wealth push down and they shut down those of us who don't have resources. And so I think about all the ways that money, it's about money and holding onto money. And it's about, who has access to power and resources they're the ones who actually get to. And how ironic it is that right now we're screaming, the people who are screaming the loudest about cancel culture are the ones with money and resources. And so it's just such a fallacy. It's such a, you know, Pernell, you say this all the time, it's the emperor and no his clothes, right? Like no clothes. Yeah, it's the Wizard of Oz. And, you know, the people who are yelling right now are like the Wizard of Oz. If we just take the, there's nothing behind there, but this little man, this little terrified little white man standing behind that curtain, screaming with a megaphone, cancel, I've been canceled, I've been canceled. Meanwhile, you're running the whole thing. You're running the whole thing. I think about the Wizard of Oz. And meanwhile, you are running the whole thing from behind that curtain. And if we could just like take away that curtain, and that's what I wish. I mean, that's the thing I think that I'm heartbroken by is the number of particularly white folks in this case. When I think about Trump and the week after he was canceled from Twitter, like, man, that man has access to the White House press room.
Right.
Like there is not anyone in the world who has access to greater media coverage. So now you're crying about him being canceled from Twitter and he's been canceled. I mean, like he's the last person on the planet that's been canceled. He just has to move his words to the place they should have been in the first place.
Right.
Like he shouldn't be communicating on Twitter in the first place. It should be from the White House in the first place. And so and yet there's a man back there behind stage, behind, and I just want to hold that curtain up and say, yo, I need you to see this little man behind the screen who is not so smart and not so wise. And he's playing with your minds. And how is it that you don't see this?
Yeah, we don't want to see. Don't want to see.
Yeah.
And you know what I'd say to the little man behind the curtain is to take his hand and go, I'm so, so sorry.
Yes.
I'm so, so sorry that you were told this huge lie and that you weren't allowed to have compassion or space, even for yourself.
Self.
You were held hostage by these lies and held to an impossible standard that nobody could. And so look how, come on over here, baby. You don't have to fight anymore like that to be held to this impossible standard. Breathe. Come on over here and breathe.
Yeah.
And that's what she talked about in the videos.
I know.
Be a bridge. Right? It's like, come on. You don't have to live like that anymore. It's exhausting. Mm-hmm. We know it is. And it's exasperating everybody and hurting yourself more than anybody else. Because look where you've trapped yourself in this ridiculous, heinous story that you need relief from. You need healing from.
Yeah.
Come on down off of that pedestal, off of that lie.
We're talking about Professor Loretta Ross. She was interviewed on A Word. Is that what it was?
Yes, A Word.
A Word. Yeah. And she started talking about radical love. And
love that?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so she was asked, did she think that radical love was a way to healing these folks who were extreme, you know, on the extreme right, extreme hate from extreme hate camps, and versus, you know, canceling them. And and her answer was, I thought, a great one, which was, it depends on whether there's true
repentance.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
He said a lot of times we see on TV the, you know, it's some story as in, you know, somebody talks has a conversation and talks somebody off the ledge of that extreme. And she said, really, it's people who wake up from information and then they remove themselves and then they come looking for the NAACP and places like
right.
that for the healing because they're just the shock of the depth and the length of the lie is so devastating. And so they come looking. And so, you know, it's just not like TV. So I appreciated her.
Yeah.
That was good.
And so.
And I love just this, you know, I talk about courageous love all the time anyway. So when she said radical love, I was like, yes!
I know.
I love this so much. This is what I talk about all the time. And I think, I was asked a question in an interview yesterday. I can't even remember, y'all. My day was so crazy yesterday. But in an interview yesterday, I was asked I know what it was. So I preached. This is such a crazy story. I was invited to preach at a Seventh-day Adventist church yesterday morning in Princeton, New Jersey. Mm. So Dr. J knows this. Like, I was accepted at Princeton exactly 32 years ago this week.
Yep.
And I was invited to speak at a church right next to Princeton's campus yesterday morning. So I'm preaching in this, and I realized, like, on camera right before church started that, oh my gosh, y'all, it was 32 years ago exactly this week. I was so, just could see the whole world coming full circle. And one of the things they asked me after I preached, I said, you know, is it okay if I stay on and people can ask questions? And they're like, sure. So you have all these people that are in that academic, elite academic world. And this church was possibly the most diverse church I've experienced ever. I mean, people from Central America, South America, Europe, continent of Africa. There was a French African man there. So we got to speak French a little bit. Like, it's this awesome organization of people. But somebody asked me a question. It was a teacher. His name is Julian. He and his wife are teachers. And he said, is it possible as a teacher? He said, I'm just curious. Can you teach students and just celebrate them? Or, you know, how do you hold the standard high for them too? And I said, well, I believe that love calls us to hold the standard high. And what that means is we've got to both celebrate them and critique them. I think actually without critique, we don't love.
Right.
I think a true radical love requires critique. It requires that we interrogate. It requires that we tell a student, just in the context of school, we tell a student, wow, that was not your best work. And I know you all appreciate this as athletes too. And I shared, you know, if my basketball coach said your form was off, I could ignore them, or my coach could not tell me my form was off and I could just keep shooting sideways, right? But getting my form straight was about loving me. It's about calling me higher, right? Mm-hmm. But I think we have this, I think cancel culture, here's my connection. I think we have this notion of America right now and patriotism that love is only celebration and love is not also the critique. And I think that is incredibly dangerous. And that's actually not love and it's not patriotism, the way that I see it anyway.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Needs accountability and ownership along with that.
That's right.
And you don't, I'm forgetting where I heard this, but just to call on people. I don't need to call them out or call them up. Just call on them to be better. That's what we need, to call on our country to be better. And we're doing that in every way possible. It's like I teach the third graders, eyebrows up. Like, did you mean to do that? Or you're stepping all over my foot. Grace, like, eyebrows up.
Yeah.
You're in the growth spurt. You're going to make mistakes. You're deer in headlights. So teaching them about how to receive that critique and give it.
And I love that.
The counseling is not a fun, you know, the eyebrows down counseling.
And I love how she says, somebody says something that's a hot mess. She said, did you mean to say that? Mm-hmm. She asked a question. I love that, because that's what I naturally do too, is ask a question instead of, I can't believe you said that, and shaming people out loud. I loved her talk in the A word too about right now we have this culture of shaming people too. Mm-hmm. And that is just not useful. And as teachers and parents, I mean, all three of us are parents, you know, shaming, I have seen parents who shame their children. And I see what that does to children. It destroys their sense of self. It and I watch children who are shamed starting when they're little are unable to really become their best selves because they're constantly living in fear of being shamed. And there's constantly this, you know, how do I become what my mom says I should be? And there's this fear all the time. Shame does not help us step into our best self. And I love what she said just about, yeah, let's call on people and let's not call them out. Because I think we're doing a lot of calling out as a culture right now. And I just wrote a post about this on Facebook. And I said, you know what, as a teacher, I absolutely believe if we want to become our best selves, we need to call people in. And when we critique people, do it in such a way that we call people into their best selves and not just shaming them publicly. As if I ever called a student stupid in front of other students, they're not going to learn from me.
No.
And they may show up in a different way in class because they know how I'm going to respond, but it's not going to change who they are in a good way.
No.
Just learn to play the game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And like I said, I don't want to play anymore.
No.
nobody wins when we play that game.
No. And let's get real too. The shaming, I mean, that comes right out of white supremacy culture that's connected with you know, Christianity and heteronormativity. And I mean, all of that just flows right out of, and I don't mean Christianity as I believe it could be practiced in a beautiful, loving way.
Christian church.
Practiced in a sort of painful, like hierarchical way. And that's where shaming comes from. And, mm-hmm. and it doesn't do anything except try to be punitive. It's not about being corrective or kind or loving. And so I don't know what we're really trying to do when we do that. And I know that folks think that that's what we're supposed to be doing. And I mean, you can look at our prison system as an example, but, and that's
really working
well. And that's not really working well, right? I know that's not working well at all. And a great example. And so here we are, I think we're sitting at a place where, I mean, all of us, I think, could agree we need to do something radical around healing this racial injustice that has happened in that started our country. And mm-hmm. if we're going to do that, there has to be incredible accountability on the part of white people and what we created in this country. And that's not going to happen through shaming. White people are not going to, we're not going to shift if we're mm-hmm. shamed into that. We are going to shift if we decide that we are going to take accountability for what we did and move this country in a different direction with everybody else.
That's so good. So good. So yeah. As we go out today, and you think about the people that are in your lives and the people who may be listening to this podcast, what is a word or, just the thought that you would want to leave with people around cancel culture, and how could people step in and kind of interrupt some of the conversations right now that are happening on social media around cancel culture? How could we show up differently to help educate people and push people in a more useful direction?
What comes to mind first for me is ancestors. Hmm. How did your ancestors respond and handle, look at the black and white pictures. You know, this is only two people away, folks. What were your ancestors doing at this time? Because I've heard, you know, lots of people talk about, well, oh, I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't be that way. And then like, the pictures look kind of the same right now, except for they're in color. And so what legacy are you leaving for your children? How are they going to live this out? Because you're living out exactly what your ancestors did or didn't do, responded, didn't respond, canceled, didn't cancel. You're living that legacy right now. So are you going to pass your ancestors' legacy on, or yours? What is yours going to be? Because they're watching right now. They're living and imitating, and guess what? Their eyes are all over your social media accounts. And they'll live as long as we have electricity. So what are you putting out there? How is that going to live? Are you going to look back on that and see yourself in that black and white photo? Like, yeah, just take a snapshot right now,
mm-hmm.
and put those ripples forward.
That's good.
See what that looks like. So,
Dr. J, how about you?
Well, I love that you said that, Farnell, because actually I was thinking about this last night about my ancestors and that my family and my family line and where I am in it, and that it's, and actually I think my family line is kind of coming to an end at where we are, and And I was thinking, I'm that's fine with me. And I want to, I don't want the legacy of that man, of him who helped bring slavery and who helped bring tobacco to this country. I don't want that to be the thing that happens with that family line. What I want is to be able to participate in healing racial injustice in this country. And that's what I want to leave. So that's how I'm feeling and thinking.
That's so good. I think what I am two thoughts that I would want to leave with people is, number one, something is really only canceled if it has no voice. And so I want you to ask the question the next time you hear cancel culture, you know, here's the cancel culture people again, those liberals. Let's think about the ways that Colin Kaepernick was canceled by the right. I mean, there's a list of people that have been canceled also by the right. So I want to challenge you to think about, when you hear cancel culture, is that person actually silenced or not? Usually they're not silenced. It's just capitalism at work. It's people are just not buying that thing, or that's capitalism. It's not they've been completely silenced. So let's think about that. And then let's think about who's in power to cancel, who has the resources already and who doesn't, whose voices are really canceled. So think about who's that person that you watched not be able to get a job and be completely without access to media anymore because folks in power have truly canceled them. So who are the voices that are actually being canceled? And then the last thought that I would want to leave with people is, you know, we talk a ton in this country about freedom of speech, a ton. And I say this to teachers all the time when I do training, but I want to say it here too, to all of us. Yeah, we have freedom of speech. You can say what you want without the threat of going to prison for what you say. And just because you can doesn't mean you should. Mm-hmm. So let's think about, so those of you who are listening, who are educators, your students and families are watching you on social media. And it goes back to something that both of you have said now. What is the message that you're sending to your students and families? If I were your student, would I believe that you actually could care about me? And not just care about me, but that you would value me. If I were to look at your social media right now, would it be clear that you could value someone who looked like me? And if not, then I need you to think about, is it worth what you're posting on social media? Because that is sending a message about what you actually believe. When you're not on school time, what is the message that you're sending? But I would ask us, and again, it's not about policing yourself, but it is about what is the footprint you want to leave? And back to Fresnel's point, what is the legacy that we want to leave behind? I have made mistakes in the past, and I've left them on social media because I want people to see that I'm learning over time. And there's a danger to that, because that's, as I learned, you know, running for political office, it can be weaponized against you. And because I'm an educator and I talk about learning from my mistakes, I need to leave that. I need to not clean up my mistakes. I need to let people watch me learn, because that's the responsibility for me as an educator, I believe, right, to let people watch me. I need to model what I'm asking people to do. So I just want to offer to folks, think about, what is that message you're leaving behind? And are you choosing to use your words and your platform and your power to build us up or to tear us down? Because in the end, we are all torn down when the least of these are torn down. And America's, it's not just Black and Brown America that's being harmed by these conversations. It's us as a country, us, US, are all being harmed by this moment that we're in of not exposing to the light our truth. So
good. Ooh, I love talking about all the things with you too.
Me too.
So glad we did this.
Yeah.
Yay.
And thank you for all of you who are tuning in. We'll see you next time.
Next time. All right.
Woo!
To find Fresnel Miller, look for her at The Root of Us on Facebook and Instagram, as well as LinkedIn, and check out her book, You Are Here, Field Guide for Racial Reality, on the website.
If you want to reach Dr. Jen Self, you can find them on LinkedIn or at rick13.com.
If you're looking for Erin Jones, you can find her on Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, and Instagram. You can also purchase a copy of her book she co-authored, Thrive, on Amazon. And